One second.
Blog Talk Radio.
Can you still hear me okay? Or?
It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us now. Or email your questions and comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or tweet them to us at Monday Radio. And now, here's your host, Ann P. Mitchell, Esquire. Good evening and welcome back to another episode of Monday Night Radio. We have such an exciting and very important show for you tonight because tonight we are all going to learn how to get organized. And let me tell you, that is something that is near and dear to my heart because I know in trying to run a business, run a radio show, although I do have wonderful help in both from producer Evan, but also to be a parent, to homeschool, to do all of these things, it really takes a lot of organization, far more than I can confess to having. So I am really looking forward to having tonight's guest help me as well as to answer your questions. First, let me just remind you all that you can call in to talk to our guest and to ask her your questions or give her your comments at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. But you can also send us your questions and comments by Twitter to @MondayRadio. You can email your comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com. Or you can also just hang out in our chat room, which is on the Blog Talk Radio site, and you can ask us questions there. I also want to remind you to sign up for our newsletter, which will give you the insight and give you sort of a future heads up that most people don't get of the upcoming shows. So be the first to know who our new experts are. And it will also let you know when we post the audio and the transcripts of previous shows. Finally, before we bring this special guest on, I wanted to let you know about next week's show when our thoughts will turn from organizing to something a bit more somber, but also just as necessary, and that's funeral planning. It seems like we've been talking quite a bit about death on the show lately. Last week we had the Reverend Andrea Rayner, who talked about how to support a friend or a family member who's gone through the loss of a loved one. And next week we'll be talking about how do you plan a funeral when it's one of your own loved ones who's passed away. Again, a somber but very important topic and something you really need to know before you have to deal with it. So tonight's guest, though, this is a very upbeat topic, and again, it's a very optimistic and invigorating topic. She is the author of The Other Side of Organized, which is a wonderful book. I'm holding it right now in my hand, and it's just full of not only great advice, but it's not the same sort of cliched and trite advice that you often might read or receive about getting organized. Her advice really makes a lot of sense, and you don't have to be superhuman to put it into effect. So let's bring on our guest, Linda Samuels, the author of The Other Side of Organized. Let's see. Do we have you there? Linda, are you there?
Hi,
Linda.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm just so happy to be here with you tonight. And I loved hearing you share all about the very many hats that you're wearing.
Well, as I said, this is really a subject that is just near and dear to my heart because I am always, always trying to stay on top of everything. And, you know, I think so many parents, not just parents, but especially parents who are really trying to do it all. Not just women, although we certainly were told decades ago that we can do it all and we can have it all, and then we find out that it's not that easy. But I think anyone who's trying to wear several hats gets to a point where they realize that, you know, they're always doing not 100% in any job, and that, you know, the best you can hope for is to do both or all four jobs well, but not perfectly. But that's not a really great place to always be. And you have advice that can really help us to get to being the best we can for each of those places.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been in a similar boat where, you know, you're running a business, you're raising a family, you're doing all the things that we love to do in our lives. And I think ultimately what I've come to is that you can do all these things, you can't necessarily do them simultaneously. And whatever you choose to do, the idea is to focus on that thing at the time. So if you're, you know, if you're hosting your radio, well, then you go for that and block all the other hats that you have to wear out at that moment. But then, so that's part of it, the focus on, you know, be in the moment, be where you are. But the other piece is to really think about, do you want all these things in your life? Because obviously the more we add in, the more chaos we have, the harder it is to juggle, the harder it is to really enjoy the things that we think we want. So I think it's always a matter of kind of asking the questions and finding what is the right balance. And that's not a one-time thing. It's an ever-shifting. So when you go from not being a parent to, let's say, having children, there's a shift there. But then as they grow, things change. So it's constantly a moving target, but I think they're questions that you want to ask yourself, so that you can really enjoy your life rather than feel like you're always trying to catch up with your life.
One of the things that I really like about your philosophy, and I hope I am not misrepresenting it, and I've just invented this for myself because I really like it, but I don't think I am, is that, you know, you are very realistic in your organizing advice. And one of the things that I really got out of your philosophy and method, if we can call it a method, is that you need to be just organized enough to be the best you can be. You don't have to be Martha Stewart. And I think so many of us strive for that organizing perfection that, you know, everything in its place, even that is fraught with danger, because everything in its place, does that mean in its place where Martha would find it, or in its place where Better Homes and Garden would want to come photograph your office or your kitchen,
sure,
or in its place where you know where it is, which is a very different view. And so, again, what I took away predominantly from your philosophy and view was you just need to be organized enough. You
That's
don't have
exactly
to be
right.
organized 110%. So if
right.
you could talk
because,
about that, I'd love it.
Yeah, because you got it perfectly. And, you know, the idea, and I'll tell you where I think some of that started. I always liked a certain amount of order. That was just, you know, I grew up that way, preferring order. And where I really noticed it, I've noticed it at different points, but one turning point was when I became a parent for the first time. And I remember when our youngest, who's now 20, was a baby, and she would play with her toys, and they would be all over. And I basically was following her around, putting them away as she was taking them out. And it didn't take me long to realize I'm either going to make her crazy or make me crazy. And so I realized, you know, there can be chaos, there can be mess, but then bring it back to square one. So, you know, I would let it get out of control, and then maybe once a day I'd get it back, but not a constant. And so I think that helped to develop my idea as I went and started to help other people, which was that, you know, the idea of having a place for things is great, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the things are in their place 24/7, you know? There's going
right.
to be some chaos because we live. We don't live in the, you know, and these beautiful magazines. When they take those pictures, someone has come in and styled that shot. You don't see people living in those shots. So for most of us, there's going to be activity if we have people in our lives. But you want to have enough systems in place. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, you go right ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say you want to have enough systems in place. They don't have to be perfect, but enough so that you can move through your day with some sense that you know where things are.
Mm-hmm.
without making yourself totally crazy. Yeah.
I think always of that, and I'm certainly a prime example. I epitomize this sort of stereotype of, you know, the desk where other people would come in and they would just say, "Oh my God, she is so disorganized." But I, even though my desk may to you look like chaos, I know exactly where everything is. At least until someone in my family comes and moves it. but
sure.
But I know where it is.
Well, what you just said is so key to organizing. When I help others to organize, it's got nothing to do with how I think or what I think it should be what it should look like or feel like. It has everything to do with them. And so what you just said is exactly right. If it doesn't matter what it looks like, if it's working for you, great. It's when things aren't working, that's when you need to start asking questions and we start to look at, well, what could be tweaked to make it better. But if it's working, then there's not a problem. There's not a challenge.
So I think that sounds like the very first thing that we people who are struggling to be organized have to do is redefine what being organized means. And it means, you know, for us to be able to function effectively, not for someone on the outside looking in to decide whether or not we're organized.
That's right. And, you know, it ties into other things, too. Like when we think, you know, sometimes we get too caught up in what other people think about all kinds of things. And ultimately, it always comes down to it's just important how we feel about ourselves, our lives, what we're doing, and not what others are putting on it, because that's not, we're not living for them. We're living for ourselves.
At least hopefully.
At least hopefully, yeah.
Now, I have to say, I love your subtitle. Again, we're speaking with Linda Samuels. She is I'm not even going to try and tell you her credentials because, frankly, it blew me away that there were even these organizations. So I'm going to let you tell everyone. But let me just say she is also the author of The Other Side of Organized, the subtitle of which is Finding Balance Between Chaos and Perfection. And again, I love that because that suggests that you can rise above chaos, but you don't have to hit perfection. And I do have to ask you, you have these wonderful cartoons at the beginning of each chapter featuring Norton. Now, is Norton your actual dog?
Yes, Norton was our dog. He passed away, but he was the most amazing animal I've ever known, and he inspired those cartoons.
Oh,
thank you. Well, he passed away quite a while ago, so now I just, when I think of him, I just feel very warm inside.
Who's this on the cover of your book, then? Is this Norton on the cover? This on the cover of the book? Is that Norton?
He is a Norton lookalike. The team that I used to help design the cover, they found this picture, and I said, oh, my goodness, that's Norton. So
it's a stunt dog.
He's a cyber dog.
All right. You're listening to Monday Night Radio. You can give us a call with your organizing emergencies to speak with our expert, Linda Samuels. The number to call in to talk with Linda is 866-MONDAY-6, or send us an email at comments@mondaynightradio.com, or send us a Twitter message at Monday Radio. And Linda, we do have people just waiting to talk to you, but first, would you tell us what those credentials are and what they mean?
Sure. I'm a CPOCD, which is a Certified Professional Organizer in Chronic Disorganization. It's hard to say it quickly. But
even knew that there was such a credential? How'd you be? I mean, I could certainly be credentialed in chronic disorganization, but not so much the certified professional.
Well, there is an amazing association that is called the National Study Group on Chronic Disorganization, and that is the association that I got the credentials through. And it took me about 3-plus years to get those credentials. An amazing program that really helps to educate the organizer very specifically about the kinds of things our clients go through, and specifically clients that are organizationally challenged. So it's a very particular niche and population that I usually work with And I've spent a lot of years training in that because it's just really interesting. And it seems to be the types of clients that gravitate towards me that always have, and I've always enjoyed the most. So I decided to continue my education after many, many years. I've been organizing almost 20 years, and it was in 06 that I got that certification.
Wow. Well, let's put that certification to use now, and let's go to the phone. And let's talk to Esther, who is calling from California, and she has a question about organizing. Esther, are you there?
Yes.
Hello,
have
Esther.
A big problem. Yes. Hello?
Hi, you're on the air with Linda and Ann.
Yes, I have a big problem, and I have a three-level townhouse. It has 30 stairs. I'm an artist-writer, and I have art on each floor, and I have a studio because I asked my husband to get me a bigger house, but he got me a studio, and the studio is filled with art now. But I don't know how to organize because if I have stuff on the top floor to bring to the bottom floor and then carry it to the top floor again. So I leave it on each floor, the art and the supplies and things. And I wonder what I could do to try to organize my life so that my husband doesn't get mad at me anymore.
Oh, dear.
Well, Esther, are you're a fine artist that you have a studio in your home? Is that what you're saying? Okay. So
I have a studio at home and at another place.
Okay.
And then I have
go ahead.
And then in my car, I put it in some of my artwork in the car when I drive it to wherever I need to go. But then I have to bring it back to the house sometimes. And so I have it on each level.
Why is there so much movement of the art?
Well, I'm not selling anything. So I move it around. I keep creating more.
You're creating more, and are you moving it around because you're bringing it to galleries or bringing it to shows, or what's happening?
Uh-huh. I take it to shows, and then I pick it up from shows, and then I move it to each floor and then create more art.
Okay, so...
And so I...
The paint, let's just... Are you working what kind of medium? All kinds of medium, or...?
Yes, I have watercolor and...
Okay.
And I have, water-based oil and pencil.
Well, one question is, do you need two studios?
Well, I don't want to spend any more money for any more studios. I have one room that's filled.
Could you consolidate?
Yeah, I don't know where
studio.
To put it. Well, I put all the stuff in that studio, but it's already full. I have three shelves of art in that room that has art in it. And I know someone told me to take all the art and just put it in a place and then rent a spot, and then I'd have an empty place to do more painting.
Yeah, it seems like, what I would suggest is that you pick one designated area, maybe one of the studios that you do your art in, and have your supplies there, and then have another room or area that's your staging area. So for all the work that's done, that could go there. And if you said you have a studio in the home that's upstairs and then a studio elsewhere outside the home, whichever spot is easier to not have to be dragging things up and down stairs, I would do. But I would probably consider, instead of having it on all the floors, just try to confine yourself to just a few areas and thinking about what would make it easiest to bring in and out. The other thing is maybe you can just have a certain amount of art that's packed up and ready to go that you're bringing out, and you're not necessarily bringing all the other things constantly, and that might help with some of the movement. It's a little hard go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sometimes I work in my bedroom upstairs on the top floor, and then I carry it down to the bottom floor, and then I put it in the car, and then I you know, when I'm done with the artwork, I'll take a drive to the studio, which is 20 minutes away. And so that's one way of eliminating it. But I have like a bar that I have art in it also.
I would just try to think about trying to work in one place if you work inside, and then trying to store your art in another place, and the easiest place that would give you access in and out. So it might involve collecting everything together and getting it in one spot, the pieces that are done.
That's a good idea.
Anyway, I hope that was helpful. Okay, thanks for calling in, Esther.
Thank you.
Wow, that's an interesting conundrum, and I think you had some great insights. But somehow, sometimes it seems like we really do this to ourselves, or maybe it's not sometimes. Maybe we always do this to ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You asked me before about that certification that I had, and one of the most interesting exercises that was part of that program, that the training that I went through, is I had to hire an organizer for myself.
Oh.
Yep, it had to be, you had to do it at least once to see what was it like to have someone come in and do what you do for others. Because whatever you think you do, until you experience it on the other side, you don't really know. And one of the things I learned from that experience, it was a fabulous experience, was that what you think you understand yourself, when someone else is looking at it from an objective point of view, they see something that you just can't see. And right there was a tremendous value I found for myself. So sometimes what seems like obvious isn't until someone actually points it out, because you just kind of get stuck in a routine or a pattern, or this is the way you've always done it. And it's hard to step outside of that and say, gee, what if we tried this? Would that work?
You know what I'm remembering is that as a kid, and I remember this with my daughter as well, although not so much my son, so that may be a sort of a male-female thing, but I remember I never wanted to clean my own room, but I always loved helping my friends clean theirs, and I think that's kind of universal. Maybe it isn't, but I mean, at least as a kid, and it just occurred to me that that might, as I was listening to you about this, you know, what it's like to have someone else come in, that maybe there's something related to that as well, that just those fresh eyes, but it's also more fun for someone else.
Sure. Well, when, you know, that brings us into another part of the whole what goes on with organizing and why people collect things and why it's so hard to get rid of, which is that, you know, when it's your own stuff, you're attached to it in a certain way. There's an emotional attachment sometimes. And when it's somebody else's stuff, you don't have any of those attachments. So when you're going in and helping someone else, you can see it in a different way. When it, and when you're trying to do it yourself, it becomes sometimes, not with everyone, but sometimes it's much more of a challenge, much more of a struggle. To say, gee, you know, should I get rid of this? Should I keep this? Why am I? You know, it's even hard to ask the questions.
So first let me again say that you're listening to Monday Night Radio, and our guest is Linda Samuels. She is a CPOCD, and I want to be careful to really put a space between the O and the CD, but I was also really tempted to put a 3 in the CPO. So I'm sure that I'm not the first to make that observation. But in any event, all that means that she is an excellent, par excellence organizer, helping other people get organized. And you can ask Linda your questions or give her your comments about being or getting organized by giving us a call at 866-MONDAY-6 or send us a note on Twitter at Monday Radio, or email your questions to comments@mondaynightradio.com. And Linda is the author of The Other Side of Organized, Finding Balance Between Chaos and Perfection. And speaking about other people coming in and looking at you know, what you might have collected and looking at it differently. We have someone here on the line who actually has a question about dealing with a large collection, and she's calling from Kansas. Rosalie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome
to
Monday Night Radio.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Linda?
Well, I have a lot, but I'll try to keep it to one or two. I do have inordinate amount of collections that I don't want to give up because they are designated down the line for a nonprofit group. And I can't manage these collections. They're wonderful, you know, just a little bit of everything. But I do have an awful lot of textiles and clothing that are Midwestern Americana, documenting about 100 years. And
wow.
I can't,
that's amazing.
I can't physically deal with this stuff because it's heavy. Now, there is a second floor where I can store things, but I prefer not to just store it. I'd like to be able to access it sometimes, especially the clothing. And I don't know what to do.
Do you want to access it to wear it or to display it?
To display it and to let other people see it, or if it comes to that, maybe even rent it out, you know, for somebody needs it for theater or something like that.
Huh,
and
amazing.
Where they can see.
Okay. Well, I guess I have a couple. Is there more that you want to share, or?
Well, it's just that physically I can't carry these things up the steps.
Let me
and
ask you this,
I don't
Rosalie.
Know.
Yeah. If you could carry them, or if someone else could carry them, is there physically the room in your environment to have something set up, or it's part of it's that they're heavy, but is part of it that there's too much of it for the space you have?
Or no,
you have
there's
enough
space.
There is space?
Mm-hmm. But I can't afford lots of racks or storage. I just can't afford it, you know, like acid-free containers and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what to use.
I guess I have a couple thoughts. Well, the first thought was that if it's the physical part that's difficult, perhaps you could get a volunteer or hire a student as someone to help to do that piece of it, do the lifting when you needed it. You know, you could have a certain amount of hours a day or a week and have an assistant. And they could also help you maybe to organize it, archive it, however. That's one thought. The other thought is you mentioned that eventually you want to donate it to a nonprofit. I'm assuming you've already researched what that organization is going to be. And another thought is that instead of waiting, you could donate a portion of it, you know, so that you have – that was if there wasn't enough space. It doesn't sound like that's the issue, but that's what I was thinking. You could donate part of it now and then keep some of it, which maybe would make it easier to manage.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like you were talking about earlier, you get so emotionally attached to these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't want to relinquish any of it at this point yet. And,
right.
But
is it, are you able, but yet, are you able to manage it at all? Because if you had less of it, where you knew part of it was in a, you know, was where you wanted it to go eventually, but you had maybe a third of it or two-thirds of it with you that you could then manage because it wasn't as much, would, do you think that would work for you, or are you just not so sure about that?
Well, I'd have to think about it. And see, the problem is I'm in a remote area, and to find the students or the help is really, really difficult. I've tried that. And I even tried community service, but so many of those people are thieves.
Well, that's not
and
good.
That didn't work either. You know, they take
things. I would. Yeah, you definitely want someone. I mean, you know, it could be a high school student possibly that was, you know, interested in the history Are there any community colleges near you?
No. No, this is really a remote area.
That's one of the big problems. Sure. Well, I mean, I think, again, it sounds like maybe some thinking is needed to really ask yourself, you know, if you can't have help in the lifting, and obviously we don't want you to get hurt, what could work? For instance, is it the lifting up the stairs or just lifting at all?
It's especially lifting up the stairs, and I've thought about if I'm willing to do the extra physical work, I could maybe even take up smaller amounts at a time. And if I could come up with something good for acid-free storage, that would also help a lot. But
right.
I don't know where to go anymore to find containers that are inexpensive for this type
of
storage.
Yeah, with acid-free storage, there's not going to be something that's inexpensive because that, you know, they charge a premium for that. That's definitely the case. And so that's why I was thinking, you know, and again, just some thoughts to think about. It sounds like you have an absolutely incredible collection and you know what you want to happen with it eventually. If it went to some of it at least went to the nonprofit sooner than later, they probably would have the funds to be able to store the pieces properly to really preserve them. So maybe, you know, just something to think about. The other thing I'll throw out is instead of these collections being stored upstairs, could you designate something on the main floor, an area to do that in? And then there wouldn't be at least the lifting up and down the stairs. Would that help you? And just something to think about.
Well, I have thought about that, but so far I haven't come up with a space downstairs. But, you know, if I think on it some more, you know, I'm pretty resourceful. I may come up with something of that. I was thinking of that yesterday, in fact, if I could just figure out a first floor solution.
The only other thought that comes to mind is, would there be a space somewhere, you know, that someone would be willing to let you store the things in, that would be a ground floor space where the whole place could be for your collection. I'm not sure, you know, if something like that would work either. But anyway, it sounds like you have some options and some things to think about and that you've collected an amazing group of valuables. So I wish you
well,
Leslie.
Well, thank you. You're helpful. I'll think
thank
on it
you.
Thank
you
more.
So much.
Thank you.
Thanks for
Thank you for the
in.
Call, Rosalie. You're listening to Monday Night Radio. Our guest is Linda Samuels, the organizing expert, and you can give her a call on our toll-free line at 866-MONDAY-6 or send us a note by Twitter at Monday Radio. And you can email us any questions or comments at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Linda, can you tell us, without revealing any confidences, give us some examples of some of the most challenging situations into which you've walked so that we can feel better?
Sure. I think probably they can be challenging for a variety of reasons. And I can give you kind of two extremes, which are sort of interesting. Mm-hmm. In both cases, I got calls from potential clients. In one case, the client said that she had so much clutter in her home that she couldn't even walk in the door. And the other client said, they both became clients, said to me that he had so much clutter in his home that he couldn't even think.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, you know, when you hear these things, you're asking lots of questions, but then ultimately what happens is someone decides they either want to move ahead and have you come into their space and see if you can help them, or they don't. Well, in both of these cases, I was invited in. And in the first case, when I came in, it was really true. There was so much clutter that I could barely get in the door. There was just like a little pathway that went from the front door like an L to the couch, and that was the only clear area, and everything else, she couldn't walk anywhere else. She wasn't sleeping in her bedroom, wasn't cooking in her kitchen. So that was very extreme. She had gone through a depression, and when the depression lifted, this is kind of what the state of her home looked like, and she didn't know how to get out of it. So we worked together over quite a long period of time to help really change all of that and get her back sleeping in her bed and cooking in her kitchen and the whole bit. Well, so that was one very extreme case. The other situation, when I came in, you know, I didn't see any clutter. And we sat down and we talked for a little bit, and he said, well, you know, it's really bad in the living room, which is where we were sitting. And I'm looking around, and I'm pretty good at identifying clutter. And I said, well, could you show me what's bothering you? So he pointed to a small pile of books, and he said, it's really bad. He said, but truthfully, the worst of it's upstairs. So I figured, okay, he just needed a little time maybe to get used to me. You know, he was inviting someone new into his home. We go upstairs, and he said, my desk, I just can't even think. And I go up, and we see his desk, and he had just a few pieces of paper on his desk. And then, again, in his closet, he said, my closet's terrible. Again, he only had maybe 10 things hanging. And for him, what it was that it was so tough to make any decisions that one or two things were clutter, so much clutter that it was hard for him to even process and think. So the reason I give you those two stories is that what I really learned very early on was that clutter, it has almost nothing to do with what it looks like. It has to do with how it feels for that person. And everyone has a different level of what they're comfortable with, what they can tolerate, and even within a household, there's huge variations with how people feel about it, which is what sometimes causes a lot of tension in a household when people have very different views on how it should be. So what happens for me is when I come into someone's space, I have to just tune into what their issue is, you know, and what where they are and where they're trying to get to, and we look at all the different things. So it's really fascinating, I have to say.
Well, and that first scenario that you were talking about, we just actually got a comment or a question in through the internet, and it all just dovetails, because I was actually thinking, I don't watch television, but I did have occasion on Netflix one evening to stumble into the I guess it's a show on one of the cable channels, on, you know, a reality show about people who hoard. And I guess that's
okay.
The new
hoarders,
thing is all
yeah.
The hoarders. There's shows about hoarders, and it's way in the public consciousness now. And
yes,
so as you were describing that first one, it brought to mind some of the scenes I saw in this show. And the question we got on the internet was, which is related, I think, is when does this disorganization rise to the level of an actual medical problem where you need a medical professional to intervene? And I assume that is also where they're going with these hoarder shows, is that these people really have some kind of a psychological. So when does that, you know, sort of what's the line? When do you walk in and say, okay, this person needs a different kind of help?
Well, first of all, very often in that initial conversation, depending on what, you know, I'm going to ask as many questions and also try to get the person to share with me as much as they're willing and comfortable to share. Because the more I know, the more I also know whether I'm the right fit for them and whether they feel that I'm, you know, and vice versa. Because it's a pretty personal relationship. But depending on what they tell me and what's happening, I might even ask if they have some other support, because in certain cases, depending on what they reveal, I know that it would make no sense for me to go in if they weren't already working with a therapist, for example. That part of the work that we do is physical. You know, you're physically helping them, but that there are so many issues that come up that are beyond our expertise as organizers, that if they don't already have a rapport, a relationship with a therapist or some, you know, mental health provider, that I know that it's probably not going to be enough, like I won't be able to help them enough because they need that other support too. And certainly in the case of a hoarding situation, hands down, you don't want to go in as an organizer if they don't have a team, you don't have like a team of support, because that's a very extreme situation.
So how do you make that call? In other words, like, when do you walk into a situation, you know, and again, it's all up until some point, it's quite subjective, but there must be some sort of a defining point at which it's, you know, this is someone who's very disorganized. Oops, they just crossed the line. This is someone who actually has a hoarding problem. How do you tell?
Well, I would say that one of the things that you listen for is that, you know, I never feel that part of the work I do is to, people think, oh, organizers, they want to make us get rid of things. They want to make us throw things out. And that is certainly not my philosophy. However, in the process of organizing, there is always editing. So if when you're talking with someone, what they're saying is they just want to keep everything, that like they can't move in their space, but they don't want to get rid of anything, that's one clue right there. And you have to start to then ask a little more what's going on with those things. So I listen for those kinds of clues. Because if they're telling me that they are overwhelmed with their stuff, but they can't part, they will not part with anything, then right away I know there's an issue. There's an issue that's going to be beyond how I can help them. So
okay.
I'm always listening for words of change, of willingness for change. You know, why does someone call an organizer? Well, they call for different reasons, but usually when I get the calls, they're already overwhelmed and frustrated. They just can't take it anymore, whatever that is. They could have, their marriages could be in trouble, their jobs could be in trouble. They could be totally on the edge, because if there's so much disorganization and chaos, it can cause a lot of serious issues within households and families and workplaces and all that. So they're reaching out because they're hoping that maybe somebody can help them. So I'm always listening to hear, why are they calling? What is the issue? Where do they feel they're willing to go? Now, when someone says they really are ready for change, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to do all the things that really are necessary to make the change, but as long as they're willing, you can start the process with them. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're listening to Linda Samuels, the organizing expert. She is the author of The Other Side of Organized, Finding Balance Between Chaos and Perfection. And you can call to talk with Linda or to ask her a question at 866-MONDAY-6, or send your comment to comments@mondaynightradio.com, or send us a note on Twitter at Monday Radio. And we have another caller who would like to talk with you, but first let me just ask to be sure. Linda, your book is available on Amazon, right?
It's available on Amazon, and also, if you don't mind, I'm having a ultimate organizing giveaway right now on my book website. So if people are interested in that, it's going to end this week. It's ending November 11th, and there's still time to enter. So I encourage everyone to go to my book website, which is theothersideoforganized.com, and it's very easy to enter. It's a great giveaway. And my book's available there. It's available on Amazon. It's available all over. So,
And I looked at that giveaway, and it is, in fact, not only a wonderful giveaway, but it's a delicious giveaway.
Yes.
Not to give anything away. No,
yes.
No pun intended. Am I right in understanding that there is no purchase necessary, although you should all buy Linda's book? It's really wonderful, and it's funny, and it's a fast read, and it makes so much sense. But you can enter just by doing something as simple as clicking on friending you on Facebook, right?
Absolutely. So it's, yes, there's no obligation to purchase anything, and it's it's really fun. Even if you want to just go on and check out what's in the giveaway, the things that I picked are really fun. So
they are fun, and as I said, yummy. Let's go to another caller. We have Jessica calling from California, and she has a question about storing electronics. Hi, Jessica.
Yeah.
You're on the air with Ann and Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Jessica.
Well, tonight is funny timing because while my fiancé is away in a very late class tonight, I'm surprising him by making over his very crowded and disorganized office space.
Wow.
So my fiancé is a true techno gadget geek, and he mm-hmm. loves gaming, and so he has every gadget under the sun, and they all seem to come with at least three different wires and USB cords and all kinds of connectors, and wires are the bane of my existence. Like, I feel like we've got them all over the house, and I hate them. And I, when they're plugged in and being used, I can, you know, gather them up with, you know, ties. But other than that, like, he's just got all these random cables and cords and random modems and electronic stuff that I don't even know what half of it is. What's a good way to store that stuff?
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because I'll tell you a story. Almost every home I go into, there are these piles of wires and chargers, and normally when I'm working with people, they have no idea what they are, but they're afraid to get rid of them. One time I worked with someone who actually, he knew what everything was. And it was the only time it ever happened. We worked together, and as we were working, he goes, I don't need that. And he was throwing the stuff out. I was thrilled. I've never had that experience where someone actually knew what all the pieces were. Well, I'm assuming that your fiancé actually knows what they are. So,
he does. We just moved recently, and I could hold up every single thing, and from across the room, he'd tell me what it went to.
Okay, so one thing you could do is, I use a labeler, like a Brother P-Touch labeler, and you could make a label that wraps around the cord. So if one of these cords randomly gets, you know, placed somewhere, you both know what it is. And then you could conceivably have either, you know, even like a shoebox type thing. I don't know, you know, what kind of volume you're really talking about, but, and also, I know you're in California. Even if you don't have a store near you, online they're available, containerstore.com. They have great plastic boxes. And you could just designate boxes for the different types of things. So if you've got, you know, and so, again, I don't know what the – it's hard for me to say what the categories are, but let's just say you mentioned, you know, USB cables. So let's say you had a box and it was labeled USB cables and all the USB cables were in there. But if it was more important that a particular kind of a gadget was together, like let's just, for example, say you had iPod stuff. You know, you had the little chargers that go with it and the wires. Maybe you needed an iPod box. I don't know what the categories are, but I would suggest, A, labeling the pieces so when they get separated, you know where they go, and then creating these different, you know, categories based on really how he uses it, I think, would make sense.
Yeah.
You might need to work together on that. I mean, I think it's lovely that you want to organize it but it might be useful if you could do it together, even if he just says this, and also to think about, well, how would he want to access the stuff?
That's a great, and for now I actually just threw everything into one big box because I'm not even going to to do it all by myself, but that's a really great idea.
Well, good luck, Jessica.
Thank you.
He's lucky to have
you.
Thank you for the call.
Aw, thanks.
it's really, she put it, the bane of my existence, too. I have so many cables, and I've done exactly, on really good days, I've done exactly what you suggested, and it worked so well, which is just to wrap around at one end, you know, a label that just says, you know, printer cable.
Yeah.
And in
exactly.
fact, I even found that that's very useful to have one on each end, even when they're hooked up.
Yes.
Because sometimes
Absolutely.
It's like a rat's nest back there, and it can help you trace it. I also wanted to say that one thing that I've really put to good use is, well, this, see if you can figure out what I'm talking about. I go to the grocery store, and they sell these amazing clear plastic boxes that I now use all over my house for organizing, and they have salad in them.
Oh.
So I feel like I'm buying a clear plastic organizing box,
yeah.
and I get a bonus of free salad. Of course, the
oh,
reality
yeah.
is it's the boxes of salad. But they're about the size of a shoebox, and they have a lid. They're not very, you know, it's thin plastic, but they I have,
sure.
They're wonderful. They fit a pair of shoes. You can put all kinds of
huh.
things in them. And
wow.
so we
That's
go through a lot
salad.
Of that salad. And yeah, we go through a lot of salad. And so we have a lot of those boxes, and I just feel like that's a real bonus.
Well, you know, that's a great use. I mean, there's the whole idea of repurposing things. And
mm-hmm.
it's interesting, when I think about it, one of my grandmas in particular, she was a master at that. I mean, you know, it's not unusual growing up in the Depression era for that generation to be really good at thinking about how you could reuse something. And I think as mm-hmm. we've moved through, there was certainly the trend of just use it and throw it out. And now I think there's a trend back to how can we be conscious of what we're using, and can we use it again, and, you know, and maybe not try to just use it once and then it's garbage. So I think that's fantastic that you thought of another use for those salad boxes. That's great. I love it.
It was almost forced organization because they were just such great boxes. I didn't want to get rid of them, and I thought, what can I
that's
do
right.
with them? And there you go.
And now
so
you have
I have a question.
To eat salad. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Well, I have to say, in the spirit of full disclosure, as some of our listeners already know, it's not just us eating the salad, but we have two rescue goats in our backyard, and they're really spoiled. And so they get some
wow.
salad every night, too.
Wait, now, I have to ask, what's a rescue goat?
Well, I don't want to take your time up. We only have about
oh.
8 minutes left. But
okay.
But they were seized by the county from someone who was not treating them well, and they needed a new home. So
oh, that's so nice that you've taken care of them.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I would like to talk about to-do lists for a minute. You have
sure.
some areas in your book where you talk about that, and you talk really – you have a very interesting take on them, which I love, which sort of goes along with the rest of your philosophy of not trying to be superwoman or superman, but really just realistically sort of getting yourself more organized. So could you talk a little bit about the place of to-do lists and how you use them and how you've helped other clients to use them?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, first got on the line and you were talking about all the different hats you wear and you realize, wow, you know, you've got a list for your list, and how are you going to manage it? And I think there's really not one way to manage the list. Personally, I try to do a pretty simple kind of thing where I have one, what I would call a master list going. And that master list has, like, broad categories of the different areas in my life that I have things that will pop up. And so as something comes into my head, it goes down on that list. And I don't necessarily look at that list every day, but it's there where I can see it. And then there's the idea of the daily list. And on the daily list, I think this is where people really get hung up, because we all get really ambitious, or we can get ambitious with what we can actually accomplish versus what we're obligated to do, what we have on our plates. And so I think the idea with a daily list is you want to keep it pretty simple. If you really are struggling with getting things done, just pull off three things. Focus on the first one, get it done, the second, the third. If you have time, you can pull more things off that from the master list, but you don't want to try to overwhelm yourself on a daily basis with so many things that you're setting yourself up for failure. That's never a
mm-hmm.
good thing. And, you know, there's a million ways to keep lists. Some people like post-it notes. Some people like electronic lists. Some people like to write lists on their hands. In that organizing giveaway, I've got a special tattoo to-do list you can put on your hand. I know, isn't that funny? I love it.
It is.
But I've seen people, right? I've seen people, my daughters included, write notes on their on the palm of their hand, 1, 2, 3, what they need to do for the day. So
now I've seen women write their phone numbers on the palms of someone else's hand.
Yeah.
but not on their own hand.
Yeah. So, you know, there's, again, I think it's the same idea as when you were talking about your desk and that, you know, someone else might look at it and think, oh, it's so much stuff. But I think with to-do lists, it's very personal what's going to work. You know, I'll do something as simple as if I'm running out and I have a few errands, I like to use sort of an index type card, which is kind of stiff, and I'll just write the simple things I have to do, like bank, grocery store, post office, cleaners, even though I know that's what I have to do, I like to do it because then I don't forget something, and I like to cross it off. There's a huge satisfaction I get from crossing things off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people like to keep their to-do lists, and they have it electronically done, and so when they cross it off, instead of erasing the item, they keep it there crossed off because they like the satisfaction of knowing they did 100 things in the last month. So, again, it's very personal, and it's what works for you, but the idea is you want to break down the big list of things that you have into something smaller that's doable.
Well, let me tell you that I have not ever been able to make a to-do list work for me until I got this most awesome producer named Evan, and I hope he's blushing right now. And he is awesome. He really is wonderful. And my to-do list now, whenever I think of something, like usually it happens invariably when I'm driving in the car. That's when I, either that or in the shower, that's when I remember, oh, my God, I had to do this thing. And, of course, I can't do it right then and there. So now I email it to Evan, and twice a day he sends me my to-do list. He collates it and sends it to me. And when I do one of those things, I quickly just jot him a note saying, okay, take it off the list. And I got to tell you, everyone needs an Evan. That works so well for me.
I would like an Evan.
Ah, well,
maybe
you can't have
fear.
Him. Nope, he's all mine.
But, you know,
anyway, we have just
a couple
of minutes left. I want to make sure you get to talk about your giveaway again and tell people where they can find that information. And then if you would just sort of think of if there was one thing that you could tell people to help them get started on the road to organization, aside from buy your book, which is a given, let us know what that is, please.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like everyone, thank you all for listening, and Anne, thank you so much for having me on the show. This was really, really fun. And for anyone out there listening, I invite you to enter. It's very easy to enter. I'm doing the Ultimate Organizing Giveaway at theothersideoforganized.com. It's ending this week, November 11th. So if you go to the website, theothersideoforganized.com, you can read all about it, see the great things that I've picked, a lot of fun organizing products and books, and I wish you luck in that. And let's see, the one piece of advice I think I would leave you with is that, you know, if you're really struggling to get organized, one, just be patient with yourself. And the second thing is that if you find that you can't move ahead on your own, reach out for help. So whether that's a friend, a family member, or a professional, you know, we all have gifts, things that we're good at, and the things that we're not, that just don't come as easily to us, sometimes we feel like, what's wrong with me? Why can't we do it ourselves? And sometimes we just need someone else there with us to start us on the road. So that's what
I would...
In your book, you actually
mention having an organizing buddy, and, you know, that doesn't have to be a paid professional.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It does have to be someone that you trust. And that, I think, a key ingredient in having an organizing buddy, whether it's a family member, a friend, or a professional, is that they can come in and know and understand what it is that you want and not judge you. Because I think a lot of times that's what we're afraid that someone's going to, you know, judge us. And so you want to have someone that you're really comfortable with that's in your corner that can help you to move past that feeling of overwhelmed. But what I do know is that if you want to get organized, it absolutely is possible, and it's just a matter of how you go about doing that, but it's doable. So I wish everyone out there lots of luck with all their organizing challenges. And Anne, thank you again for having me on the show. This was so much fun. I appreciate it.
Oh, Linda, thank you so much for coming, and we really enjoyed having you. Will you come back?
I'd love to come back anytime.
Thank you again. Our
it's
guest was Linda Samuels, the organizing expert, and she is the author of The Other Side of Organized, Finding Balance Between Chaos and Perfection. And her website is theothersideoforganized.com. Be sure to join us next week when our guest is funeral planning expert Gail Rubin. It's not something you may want to think about, but it's something you should think about before you need it. Thanks again for listening. Bye-bye.